Every once in a while, in many communities, there's like a flare-up in kashrus, and people start to question like the whole institution of kashrus and why it is that we require, not of kashrus, but of why it is that we need hashgacha on things. So I thought it would be a good opportunity to talk about today why it is that we ever need hashgacha. Meaning, after all, don't we have a principle in Midoraisa, Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin, that if you have a religious person and they tell you that it's kosher, so then it should be kosher. So as long as the store owner is religious and they tell you that it's kosher, the principle Midoraisa, Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin, why do we need hashgacha in the first place? And now, wouldn't that mean that almost every hashgacha is okay because the whole thing is just an extra? It's not really needed to begin with. So shouldn't that automatically make it okay? So my friend Rabbi Warren Sinneman sent me a shiur that Rav Asher Weiss gave on this topic a while back, a few years ago, and I'm going to share with you some of what Rav Asher Weiss had to say on the topic. So Rav Asher started by asking two basic questions. First of all, why don't we just rely on Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin? Second of all, why is it that we're so makbid whenever we set up a system of kashrus that everything is like 100%? Why don't we just rely on Rov? A lot of the times, a lot of the shilas that come up, Rov would dictate that everything is fine, that everything is kosher. So why don't we rely on Rov when it comes to that? You could even go a step further. Rav Asher didn't raise the question. Rav Shachter pointed out that if you hold like the Nesivos and Reish Lamadal and Chosh Mishpat, that all Isuri Derabanan are Isuri Gavra, not Isuri Chavtza. So if a person violates an Isuri Derabanan Bishogeg, he doesn't even need Kapara. So maybe we should even allow Isuri Derabanan to get into food and just don't tell anybody. And then they're not going to need Kapara and it should be fine. So, you know, chicken and milk should be totally fine. Just don't tell anyone. And then it's going to be in Isuri Derabanan Bishogeg and it's not going to be a violation. Now that's obviously quite an extreme to go that far, but at least with Rav Asher's question. So first of all, Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin. Where does it come from, this principle of Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin? So it is a machlokas Rashi and Tosos. Tosos says based on the pasuk in Parshas Metzora, v'safrala, that a woman who's a zava gadola has an obligation to count 7 clean days, and she's trusted to do that count by herself. We don't have to ask, who saw you count, who saw you check to make sure that you didn't have any dam. She's trusted to do so on her own. And that's mikan that Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin by all Isser Veheter. Rashi, in a few places in Shas, but most famously at the very beginning of Maseches Gittin, because it's the Yeshiva Shemesechta and it's at the very beginning, so most people have learned it. Rashi, in the very beginning of Maseches Gittin, writes that it's a svara, that of course Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin, because what? You think if someone invites you to their house to eat, and they're a religious person, that you're not allowed to eat at somebody else's house? Of course you're allowed to eat at somebody else's house. Aye, but they don't have edus that the food is all kosher. You don't need edus of the food. You don't have to start asking them, oh, where's the edus that a shechita was done properly? Where's the edus of chumas and maisus? Where's it if you live in Eretz Yisrael? Well, you don't have to ask such questions. It's just a svara that Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin, because otherwise life would be unlivable. The Gemara says, though, that when it's a schazik yisurin, when there's a cheskas isur, then we do not apply Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin. So Rav Asher Weiss in Minchas Asher in Sefer Vayikra, Simen Chav Zayin, suggests that a yesod over here, that when we say Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin, it's neither a din in Eidos nor a din in Ne'emanos, which sounds a little bit strange, because the words are Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Yisurin. He says, yeah, all of that is like a misnomer. It's not Eidos, nor is it a din Ne'emanos. Rather, it's a din in Isser V'Heter, in Hanhagas Isser V'Heter. Ne'emanos is required when you have a suffix and you need Ne'emanos to be Machriya suffix. The principle of Eirecha Nemen B'Yisurin tells you, you don't even have a suffix. You could rely on a kosher Jew, and therefore it's not even a suffix. Is it this way or is it that way? And he has a couple of rayas. First of all, the aide doesn't need to say anything. He's automatically trusted. He gives you the kosher food. He doesn't have to say, I hereby testify that this food is kosher. Normally, by eidus, the person at least needs to be meid. You don't have to ask your host whether the food is kosher and whether proper shechita was done in nikur agid and whatever for Sephardim who do nikur, Ashkenazim don't do, we just throw out half the animal, but chumas and maizos or anything else. You don't have to ask any such questions. And second of all, Eidos is only relevant in Beis Din, because they are the only institution with the authority to determine whether to accept or reject testimony. In all Dine Eidos, whether it's Dine Mamadis, Dine Nefashos, it doesn't matter. All Dine Eidos, it's always testifying in front of Beis Din. A woman doesn't have to testify in Beis Din that she did her Shiva Nekiyim. You go home and your mom cooks you dinner, you don't have to, your mom doesn't have to be schlepped to Beis Din to testify that the food is kosher. So since Eidos always happens in Beis Din, and Eidos always involves saying the Eidos, it's never just an assumption, so therefore you see clearly that Eidach and Bisurin is not clearly, is not a din in Eidos. And this explains a few things. The Rambam in the fifth parak of Hilchos Eidos, after explaining Eidach b'mamon, how an Eidach by din mamnas is mechayev shvua, he writes that that b'shnei mekomos hamin b'torah Eidach, that there are two places where the Torah believes in Eidach, b'sota shlo tishto mayim amarim, and by egla rufa. And then he says, and mitra banon be'edus isha, to allow a woman to get remarried to testify that her husband is dead. The Rambam says two places the Torah believes in Eidach, and look what he left out. He didn't list Eidachan and Bisurin. That's not one of the places where he said the Torah believes an Eidachan. So Maria Al-Ghazi is bothered by this, and he has great difficulty answering the Kasha. Says Rav Asher Weiss, I don't have any difficulty answering the Kasha. Eidachan and Bisurin is not a din in Hilchos Eidos. The Rambam's talking in Hilchos Eidos. When do you need Eidos and Eidachan is going to be effective? Well, in Dine Mamnas, an Eidachan could be Mechayev Shvua. And a couple of places, in Nisavater, by a Sota, Shalotishta, and by Egla Rufa. So then, yeah, Eid Echad is good enough, but those are dinim in Eidos, but Eid Echad and Bisurin is simply not a din in Eidos. And this also explains another question: an Eid Echad should not have a ne'amanus against a rove, yet we know that an Eid Echad does have ne'amanus against a rove. The Gemara in Ksubis Staf Tezvav says that if rove chanuyos or mochos basim nevela, the chaticha is nevela, right? You find a piece of meat on Central Avenue, and not Central Avenue, they're mostly things are kosher. But let's say you find a piece of meat in some non-Jewish neighborhood, and most of the stores are non-kosher, so then you could assume that that meat is nevela. But if an Eid Echad is made that it's kosher, then he's ne'aman. Against the rove. Even though he doesn't have ne'aman, it's against the chazaka, right? We said, is chazik isura, there's no ne'aman of an Eid Echad. But against the rove, he's believed. Ruba v'chazaka, ruba adiv. So, generally speaking, why is it that he has ne'amanus against a rove? Rove is stronger than chazaka. He doesn't have ne'amanus against chazaka. So maybe the fact that he's believed against the chazaka is not a result of the weakness of Eid Echad. Rather, Eid Echad and Bisurin is a din in Hanhagas Isser V'Hetin. An Eid Echad is not machriya when there is a suffix. It just avoids the suffix entirely. So when you have a Cheskas Isser, there is already a suffix. An Eid Echad can't be machriya, that suffix. When it's just a rove, but there's no Leidas HaSuffix, there's no existing suffix, there's no reason to believe otherwise, so the Eid Echad could be machriya, could determine what the Metzius is. So if there's a suffix b'fenenu, like a cheskas iser, Eidach and Bisurin won't apply. So now let's go back to the questions. Now that we know a little bit about Eidach and Bisurin, why don't we rely on Eidach and Bisurin in kashrus? Why is it that we have to have hashkacha on stores? So really, by basic halachic principles, we should be able to say Eidach and Bisurin. However, Gedolei Yisrael throughout the generations have always, as Rav Asher put it, felt the pulse of the times and determined that more is needed. For example, the Tur in Simen Yud Ches in Yoredeya quotes from his father, the Rush, that we no longer trust butchers, and in Kol Golos Yisrael we now require oversight of people who sell meat, and we don't just rely on the integrity of the butchers. We have appointed shochtim ubotkim, they have to be appointed by the Rav of the community, and that is a takana for the entire tzibur. And that demonstrates the acceptability to change the practice and require more oversight if that's the communal need. Furthermore, the Chachma Sadim in Klal Ayin Aleph, Sif Beis, writes that one should not eat by another Jew unless he knows that that person is muchzak becheskas kashrus. Halach, you could trust anybody who's not chashud, anybody who you don't know to be chashud, Eidach and Bisurin. But now, says the Chachma Sadam, we have the right to raise those standards and say that he has to be muchzak because times have changed. And that's even if you're a guest at someone's home, let alone a business where someone's making money. There's a lot, and also it's important to keep in mind that bismaneinu, there's a lot of money involved in these things, in these decisions. A person can make a lot more money if he cuts some corners in terms of kashrus, and there's a tremendous yetzer hara when it comes to making money. So we don't trust people when there is a monetary incentive to be dishonest. So anybody who caters to the public, we always demand a hashkacha, we always demand a hechsher. Now, why invest so many resources in the area of kashrus to make sure that everything is perfect? Why not just check Rove or Miut, you know, rely on Rove? So in Yerodea Simen Tez Vav, the Yeshuas Yaakov writes in Sifkat Nir Aleph, he argues that Rove is only relevant when there's something incidental, like you find meat in the market and then you're looking and see if Teisha Chanuyos or Mochros Basar Shchuta. That's when we would follow a Rove. But when there's a Safek Kavua that didn't just come up, but it's a constant. It's something that's going to keep coming up. It's a system that's in place that will continuously happen. Then we don't rely on Rove. He says, this is a yesod gadol umimenu lo azuz. This is a major yesod, and it's something that we cannot veer from. In fact, the Chabina Rav, in his Tshuvas Doviv Mesharim, Chel Gimel, Sim Memtes, quotes the Yeshuas Yaakov, and he proves it from a Ramban in Meseches Gittin and Daf Yud Zayin. He says there's precedent for this chiddush of the Yeshuas Yaakov. And not only that, with the Netziv in Meshiv Davar and Chelek Gimel Siman Zayin confirms, and the Yeshuas Yaakov also, and he understands the Ramah this way. The Ramah in Yerodea Kuf Yotes says that if you buy from another Jew, he has to be muchzak bekashrus, as opposed to when you eat at somebody's house, then you could just automatically assume. The Chacham Asadim then added to that, but Mi'ikra Din, if you're eating at someone's house, you can just assume that he's a kashri yid, unless you know otherwise. But someone that you're buying from has to be muchzak bekashrus. Why? Because it's nogeya l'rabim, something that's nogeya on a constant basis. For the masses, we have to be more machmir. Other achronim point out that the Ramah might just mean that when buying in a store, there's a big yetzer hara to save money for the store owner, to save money, and that's why he needs to be muchzak bekashrus. Tosus and Ksubas Tav Chav Chesen Beis discusses Tumas Beis HaPras, a Sada Shenevad Bokever, Shenechresh Bokever, where Min HaTorah it is Tahora, but it's Tamei Midrabanan, and there goes their tuma because it is a suffic kavua, meaning it's an ongoing issue. Tosfos doesn't say that it's a principle across the board, but he just uses that to explain Beis HaPras, and therefore maybe we have a similar principle over here as well. Perhaps though a better reason not to rely on Rove, Rav Asher Weiss suggests, perhaps a better reason not to rely on Rove is based on a Rashba that appears in a couple of places in the Torah Sabayis and the Tshuvas Rashba, that a miut hamatzui chashinuma, that we always have to be choshesh for a miut hamatzui. What does that mean, we're choshesh for a miut hamatzui? So it means that if, let's say, do we check all of our vegetables for bugs? Do you check your red peppers and your yellow peppers and your cucumbers for bugs? No, but there might be bugs in your red peppers and your yellow peppers and your cucumbers. Yeah, there might be, but it's very, very uncommon to find bugs in such vegetables. So which vegetables do you check for bugs? The ones that have a miut hamatzui, where it's common, somewhat common. It doesn't have to be rove, but a miut hamatzui. That's why the Shulchan Aruch in Yardeh, Simulamites, says to check the lungs of an animal for trefus, and not all the rest of the trefus. Why not all the rest of the trefus? Because the lungs are a miut hamatzui. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says about checking for bugs also in Yardea, Simin Peidalit Siv Ches, that only those vegetables that it's a miut hamatzui, that they'll have tola'im, you need to actually check. So what is a miut hamatzui? How do we define miut hamatzui? Do you mean to tell me that it's a miut hamatzui, that there are going to be kashrus problems in a store owned by a frum Jew? How could that be a miut hamatzui? So Rav Asher Weiss suggests that yes, it might be a miut hamatzui for the following reason. The Rivash defines miut hamatzui as something that's close to a majority, that min haTorah any rove would be good enough, and midrabanan we're worried that you might misassess whether something's a rove or not. So if it's at like 48%, you might confuse 48% for 52%. So it's only if it's close to the borderline, the Rivash says. But that's not how the poskim say. The poskim generally assume, like the Mishkanos Yaakov in Yerodea Simen Yud Zayin, the Mishkanos Yaakov is the Talmud of Chaim Velazhner, and Mishkanos Yaakov says 10%. 10% is mira matzli. So if you're buying a suit and you want to know whether you have to check it for shatness or not, you can ask the shatness checker of all the suits of this brand or from this make, what percentage of them have shatness? And the shatness checker says, never, or I've checked 1,000 of them once it had shatness. Then meikra din, you don't have to check it for shatness. If they tell you that, oh yeah, you buy that kind of suit, you know, 20% of them have shatness, then absolutely you have to check it for shatness. Mishnas Yaakov sets it as at 10%, and it's based on a raya from two sugyas in Maseches Gittin and Maseches Bava Basra. So Rav Ashwai suggests that everybody mistakenly quotes that Mishnas Yaakov. Rav Shechter always quoted, all the poskim quoted 10%, that's the number. Rav Ashwai says you got to read the Mishnas Yaakov all the way to the end, and you'll find that at the end he changes his mind and he makes his opinion much, much clearer that it's not about 10%. It doesn't depend on any percentage points, and this is a machlokas Rav Ashwai and Rav Shechter lishitasam. Rav Ashwai says there's no such thing as statistics in halacha, that there's no numbers, there's no statistics. We follow dinim of rov, dinim of chazaka. There's no statistics. Rav Shechter says all of dinei rov and dinei chazaka are just Chazal's way of saying statistics, meaning it's all statistics. That connects to drinking milk, bismanenu. Do you rely on chazaka of each cow? It has a chazaka, or do you say statistically there's trefa milk in there and you can't drink it? But Rav Ashwai believes very strongly that Chazal never heard of statistics. So how do you define mira matzui? Mira matzui means something that's common, something that's not newsworthy, something that, you know, if it happens, like, yeah, every once in a while, something like that happens. It's not like out of the blue. It's not something that would be a total shock. So when a shochet would shecht a couple of behemoths a month, the chances that he would find a trefa anywhere but the lungs would be like a total shock. But nowadays, the definition has changed, because in places that they shecht hundreds of animals a month. They're shechting many, many animals a day. When they're shechting chickens, they're shechting thousands at a time. So it wouldn't be a shock anymore to find other trefos. And therefore, you look more than just the lungs, because wouldn't be so crazy to find other trefos. That's what Rav Asher Weiss wanted to suggest. So he said, nowadays, when you have stores that are mass producing things and companies that are mass producing things, little problems can come up, issues can come up, and it's a miut hamatzoi. It's not 10% of the products that they serve have problems. It's not about 10%. Rav Asher Weiss's definition of miut hamatzoi is that it's not so crazy. It wouldn't be so out of the ordinary. That's his chiddush. But I would suggest just more practically. Most of the time, Erech and Bisurin is not even shaykh to talk about, because the store owner is not the only one running the store. He's got non-Jewish employees, definitely non-religious employees. And there's a lot going on. Furthermore, there are things that he's not even on top of, that he can't. There are deliveries that come in, and someone has to check that the deliveries have what it says that it has. There are mistakes that could be made in the store when he's not looking. It's when you're running a dynamic operation, it's not about Erech and Bisurin. When it's one woman cooking in her kitchen, okay, Erech Hanem Bisurin. But to apply Erech Hanem Bisurin in contemporary kashrus doesn't seem to make any sense at all. And also, the large majority of kashrus violations are not done purposely. They're accidental. We just hear about the ones that are purposeful, because that's when people lose their hashkacha, when it was done on purpose. But the large majority of issues that come up are accidental issues that come up. So having that extra set of eyes is very, very useful, and not just having that extra set of eyes, setting up a system where mistakes can't happen, because you have a system in place where, you know, no delivery comes into the store until Mashkiach comes and checks and makes sure that everything matches. You know, to have the systems in place, and in order to do that, a person needs to understand how business runs and how an industrial kitchen works. The biggest Talmud Chacham is not always the best Rav HaMachshir. Often he's not. He may not be able to visualize the problems that can arise. Nothing is more valuable, though, when all is said and done, than a store owner that cares and is committed to kashrus and has great integrity and honesty. If the guy is a slippery guy and you get the sense that he's going to try to slip something past you, there's no giving ashkacha. There's no way that you're ever going to be able to keep an eye on anything. But assuming the guy is an honest guy, you still need ashkacha just to put the systems in place so that those accidents accidents don't happen, and so that the employees know to behave in a way that nothing bad is going to happen. I apologize. I